You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers and part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily local sports podcast network. I'm Chris Manning, your host and the site manager from fearthesword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. If you aren't already, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, the new Himalaya podcast app, Megaphone, or wherever you listen to podcasts. A five-star review is the best way to support the show, and you can find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs, me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Writes. On today's show, you're going to hear me talk to Tom Westerholm, the great Celtics beat reporter for Mass Live. You can find him on Twitter at Tom_MBA. He wrote a great piece on the Celtics balancing fatherhood and their basketball careers in the show notes below. He published that in early March, and it's just a fantastic human interest story, so please go check that out. But first, we're going to get into Jetty Osman's shooting as of late and get into some of the numbers about how Jetty has been playing. I think if you have watched him play lately, you've noticed his form is a bit off. You've noticed some of his issues have really kind of had him stagger and struggle in terms of offensive play. And in particular, I think as the data shows, you're seeing a player who is struggling in one particular way. Jetty's worst characteristic right now is as a catch-and-shoot three-point player, which is a bit concerning. And I don't know 100% what this means for him for the whole year. I think we kind of need to see how he might look next year or how he sort of finishes this season and then go month by month and then look at some form and do like a really big deep dive into this to fully understand really what is up with his shot right now. But for right now, if you look at his shots for the year, on 3.5 catch-and-shoot three-pointers per game, he's shooting 34.4%. For the year, he's shooting 35.2% on threes. That's not a bad number. That's 44.1% of his shots. Again, that breaks down to 34.4%, 3.5 attempts a game on catch-and-shoot threes, and then 36.8 on pull-up threes. He makes about on at one every other game, roughly. It's 11.6% of his shots. Typically, these come, he's taking a lot of his threes sort of in the early to late or in the shot clock, and with not very many coming super, super early. So the later it gets, Jetty kind of evenly distributes there. He doesn't take a lot of threes with more than one or two dribbles. He's pretty efficient on how he does it. And in particular, with the basically zero dribbles is where most of his threes come. And then if you look at his defending, he's taking a lot of them where he's wide open. For whatever reason, 25%, 28% of his three-pointers are where he is defined as wide open by NBA.com/stats. When you get into March, this gets a little bit dicier. So in March, 45% of Jetty's shots are three-pointers. That's a bit up for what he's been for the regular season. He's at 36.5%, which is 1.3% above where he is for the year. So you say, okay, that's actually good. That's actually better than I would have thought based on what I remember watching and what I've noticed in my notes. Then you get into the breakdown, and this is where it gets a little bit interesting. So catch-and-shoot threes, he's taking 32.9% of his shots are catch-and-shoot threes. That's, again, a bit up from his overall season number, less than a percent, but slightly up. But he's shooting 32.6%. That is a slight dip in his overall season number. Where he is making more of them and taking slightly more of these in a way that I'm not sure would be sustainable is on pull-ups. His three-pointers percentage on pull-ups is 47.1%, 12.1% of his shots. That's a really, really high number. That is a that would be an elite number. That is an unsustainable number. you get into the breakdown of his shots and you look at how he's being defended in this regard, his wide open threes are at 28.6% of his shots, 35%. Is doing okay there, but it's really the pull-ups that is fueling him to having a better month with his catch and shoot numbers a bit down, which would indicate that there's a slight decline in his shot. When you look at the film, you can look at Jetty and say, okay, you know, his form looks a little bit off. I'm not sure he's completely rounded on his shot, et cetera, et cetera. You can look at that and be, I think, a little bit rightfully concerned that his form isn't as prime as it might have been. And I think you actually can tell when Jetty is sort of in line, because when he is shooting and he's square, he looks very comfortable. And when he takes a second to not really breathe, but to just not rush into the shot, he looks better and it looks more in control. He's been, I think, rushing of late. I don't know quite why that is, but it's a thing. Now, Jetty's probably never going to be a lockdown elite shooter. That's probably not in the cards for him. But if he's going to be the best version of himself, pull-ups certainly can be part of his game. He's actually pretty comfortable being aggressive and taking them and doesn't really have fear in taking them, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because he's not reckless about it. But the catch-and-shoot numbers are going to have to, I think, be something he becomes really good at. It's probably a top three skill for him to develop, I would say. Probably number two, one or two in my book, along with his defensive ability in terms of what it's going to really help him succeed moving forward. He's going to be a role player in this league. He's going to be, you know, maybe the fourth or fifth or sixth guy on a team that has playoff implications, right? Like, I think that's sort of what you're looking at for Jetty and his relative outcome. Catch and shoot threes are going to be his bread and butter. And when you also just look at what kind of roster the Cavs might be building going forward, it's Kevin, you know, let's say Kevin Love, Colin Sexton, and RJ Barrett are the three leading guys for the Cavs next year, and they also bring back Jordan Clarkson, and he's not, you know, really going to be involved a lot in terms of creation there. And even just with Colin Sexton, and this would get even more complicated if the Cavs, say, take John Morant, he's going to have less and less opportunities to create for himself and get those threes. Like, he's just not going to have that same type of usage rate. So Jetty for the year has played in lineups where and has numbers with duos where, you know, you would say, okay, he's actually doing okay. With Kevin Love, it's actually the second best combo. Nwabis, his best combo. You know, his pairing, his duo with Sexton, which is by far his biggest duo, is pretty bad according to the offensive rate and the overall net rating and points per 100 possessions. It's negative 14.2. With Love, it's only negative 3, which is pretty good considering how bad the Cavs are. Their three-point percentage in those is actually the second best on those lists. So the Cavs are actually doing a little bit better when those two are. They're shooting threes a bit better than they would on average with those two on the floor. And I think Jetty can be comfortable with that. I don't think he's a guy that has to be ball dominant. I think he can have success playing with Love. I think there's things we've seen from him in terms of his running the floor and making plays in that regard that have really shown that he can succeed in that way. But the problem is that if he's not hitting these catch and shoot threes and he's not nailing those type of shots, it's going to limit him to some regard. It's going to hinder him to some regard. And I think the last month we've seen him not make those kind of shots. And if you look back into some of these other months, let's say you go into February last month, he shot, which is sort of unsustainable in that month, you know, shot 50. He came off a great streak where he shot 59.1% on catch and shoot threes in February of the season in six games. If you go into January of the season, that's a 38.6%. And if you go back into December, that percentage was at 25%. So not quite as good. So December was probably his lowest month with those percentages of his quantity of shots being roughly the same. Had two really good months. Has dipped back down, but not quite as low as his 25% in December. So while he's not that bad right now, and he's not, but he's not as good as he was. He's sort of in the middle. You would hope that this is a bit of a blip for him. And even to go back into November, his numbers were really even worse in terms of catch and shoot. So it's not like these numbers, you know, necessarily say, okay, Jetty isn't a good catch and shoot player. He's inefficient in that way. He's actually, if you look at the raw numbers, he's gotten better, but he's dipped a little bit after two really good months. And what that means for him going forward is probably just something to watch. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back to talk with Tom Westerholm of Mass Live. Remember to get the show every day. Subscribe to Locked On Cavs on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and new features every day. Download the Himalaya app at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Cavs. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play Locked On Cavs as well. We'll be right back. Today's podcast is brought to you by Wyze, the indoor camera that does it all. Wyze is packed with premium features that allow you to see everything from anywhere for only $20. It has 1080p full HD, images so clear you won't miss a thing, night vision, and two-way audio. Wyze's mission is to bring amazing smart home products and make them accessible to everyone. Check your home from anywhere with Wyze's app live stream. Connect with life as it unfolds in sharp focus. If you go away for a couple hours and you have to run some errands, you can do things like making sure your food's sitting around the stove for a couple hours, keeps going, and isn't boiling over while you're away. You can watch your plants grow through a time lapse. Or if you have a pet and you want to make sure your dog is doing okay and you have to leave for a couple hours, you can check in on it with Wyze. And if you want more, they have that too. For just $10 more, Wyze's Can Pan gives you 360-degree coverage in under 3 seconds. Life moves fast, so your camera should too. You can patrol your room with PanScan and set the camera's patrol route up to 4 custom waypoints. This works with Alexa, and it has free rolling 14-day cloud storage. So go to wyze.com/locked to get the guaranteed lowest price. Go check out Wyze today at wyze.com. That is wyze.com/locked. And joining me now from Boston, Massachusetts is Tom Westerholm. He covers the Boston Celtics for Mass Live. Tom, how's it going?
I'm doing well, man. Surviving, getting to the end of the year here. And I'm just like Kyrie. I'm looking forward to the playoffs.
So have you scheduled any time for yourself right before the playoffs to like get like a day off and do something fun? Or are you just going to go deep into this and just see where it takes you?
You know, I'm just going into this one. It would have been a good idea to do something like that. I have a 1-year-old, so like pretty much, like I'm just gonna spend some time at home, just hang out with the family, and then, in the very brief little window that we have there, and then from the looks of things, I'll be flying to Indiana because it does not look very hopeful that the Celtics are gonna have home court in the first round. So.
Yeah, so we'll get to where Boston ended up, but let's just get the most unpleasant thing we could talk about out of the way, and that's Kyrie Irving. He was ruled out on Monday for load management, and he will not play in Cleveland, as many people have noted on Twitter. He has not played a game in Cleveland since the Gordon Hayward injury game at the beginning of last regular season. It is something, for a variety of reasons, I personally have really wanted to see, especially in light of what he said over the weekend, which I don't really want to hash out, because I just find everything he says sort of odd. But what has it been like for you seeing how Kyrie has been the last year and almost 2 years now with the Celtics? Is it what you expected, or has it been something different?
That's a good question. I think it has been somewhat what I expected, in that I expected him to be a different sort of dude. I expected him to be just a magician in terms of his actual on-court abilities. I think nothing that has really happened has sort of been a surprise, in that I was expecting to have odd things to cover. I was expecting him to say somewhat strange things. I was expecting him to be supremely talented. But I do think, that expecting to be surprised, you're still going to be surprised. Like, expecting him to say strange things doesn't make the strange things less strange. And, expecting him to be a magician doesn't make the magic any less impressive. So I think, did I expect him, you know, did I expect the exact things that he's said and done? No, not really. But I did, you know, he basically has lived up to the billing. I mean, I think when they made the trade, you actually like hit me up right away and you were telling me like, you know, here are some things to expect from him. And I, you know, it's pretty much borne out exactly like how you described it to me. He's been pretty much spot on with everything that you said. So
yeah, I was
good call by you.
Yeah. So actually when I was DMing you to, like come on the podcast, I like looked like one of the, it was like the 10th message back. And it was like, we were like talking about this after the trade. And I was like, Kyrie's like not really, he doesn't say a lot. He's like not super fun to deal with. And like, I think it's even more stark than it was with the Cavs. Like he did some stuff where he would sometimes, you know, talk eloquently or when you sort of ask him, but he seems like he's taken on like a very, every time I see him, and of course, like it's not fair to judge everything he says based on like the clips you see in SportsCenter or like the stuff he says on Twitter that like has drawn all the attention. But he seems like he's just like grumpy every time he talks to the media corps that's around him all the time. And like, doesn't like the idea that like he gets asked like these questions as that sort of present him as like the leader of the Celtics, even though that's sort of how he's presented himself. Is that like an unfair read of what he's been this year?
Yeah, I think it's a little unfair. I think he's been up and down, certainly. There have been times where he's been really, really, you know, prickly and you know, you can tell that something, you know, you can tell that he read something or, you know, he saw something that kind of irked him and it's made him, you know, sort of upset with the media in general. But, you know, at other times he's been, you know, very, honestly, sometimes he's been really helpful. You know, he's had some, you know, some sort of enlightening things to say. And, you know, I think that it really does kind of go back and forth with him. And it's interesting because I don't know that it's tied to the on-court performance at all. You know, I think it's more with him. You know, I think he just sort of some days he's up, some days he's down, which honestly is one of the most relatable things about him. So, you know, I wouldn't say that he's been particularly, you know, tough to deal with or anything like that. Like, all the time, like sometimes certainly, but you know, other times he's been really good to work with. I do think that he, like most NBA players, I do think that he sort of has an idea of the media as a whole that, you know, if a media member says something or writes something or, you know, goes on TV and has a take about something, he's going to associate that with all of the media and we're all going to bear the brunt of that, which, you know, that happens pretty much league-wide. Like, right. That's definitely not a unique thing to him. But, yeah, I would say he's up and down, and it really just kind of depends on the day. Like, some days you're going to get a really talkative and helpful Kyrie, and other days it's going to be a little bit less so.
So what is the Celtics team this year? Like, they're four seed, like, they're the five seed right now. They've, you know, had the big wins over the Sixers, but probably, as you alluded to, are going to have to play a good Indiana team on the road in the first round. So what have they been this year?
Fascinating question. I think that at this point, you know, the Celtics kind of are who they are. They are a very inconsistent team that just doesn't really fit right. And that's not to say that they can't ever fit right. You know, I think that's still in the cards. I mean, we've seen at times that this team can be as good as advertised. You know, there were stretches, even in this four-game losing streak, there are like shorter stretches where they've looked incredible. I mean, they, you know, against the other night, they blew an 18-point lead to the Charlotte Hornets. But, I mean, for most of that game, they looked as dominant and as sharp as any contender should look, you know, at this point in the season. So the flashes are there. They have the ability to do it sometimes. But, you know, for the most part, Brad Stevens talked about this the other night a little bit. When they're not making shots or when, like, one or two guys goes cold, they have this tendency to everybody gets cold at the exact same time and things just really snowball. And they don't really have the mental toughness as a unit to dig themselves out of those times when things start to go wrong. So I think, you know, at this point we're 70, you know, 73, what, however many games into the season, 74 games into the season. You know, I think it's certainly possible that they do become an actual good team in the playoffs. I think that that's in the cards. I also would not say that I think that it's particularly likely at this point, or at least it's not something that, you know, that people can count on. I think that they are going to be inconsistent. You know, I think that we're going to see these same chemistry issues crop up in the playoffs. And if we don't, you know, credit to them, they got it together, but there's just no empirical evidence or any kind of evidence at all that they will be consistent when the playoffs roll around, you know, aside from Kyrie saying that he thinks that they will be.
So what, in your opinion, is the thing or a couple things that have broken the opposite way that has maybe caused them to be what they are now? I think, I don't know where you had them in preseason. I was very high in this group, and I think Kyrie is fantastic, but it hasn't worked for them. Do you have like a thing or two that has broken one way that you think could sort of maybe push them in this direction?
Yeah, I think that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have both really struggled to sort of figure out how to be the best versions of themselves within the offense and within, you know, this team structure. They've had a really hard time with that for a lot of the season, and they've also had a hard time both doing it at the same time. I mean, Tatum was really good at the start of the season. Jaylen's been, you know, incredible for like 2 months now. I mean, he's shooting like 60% from three over the last like 3 weeks or something like that. Like, he's just been on fire. So, I mean, that's really hurt them. They were really counting on those two guys. And then I also think, I mean, you know, Gordon Hayward has just, you know, slowly been working his way back this season. You know, I think a lot of people forget that he had that second procedure, you know, last year, that really pushed back his recovery timeline. He was always going to be available for the start of the season, but having that second procedure meant that he was available for the first time at the start of the season, rather than spending a summer playing pickup or just getting himself back into actual basketball shape. So he's been having to try to like rework himself into a new system and also recover from a devastating injury on the fly during the course of a grueling NBA season with just a ton of pressure and a ton of scrutiny. So, I mean, he's had just a really difficult road this year as well. So I think, you know, when you're talking about your two best young prospects and also the highest paid member of your team all really struggling with fit issues, you know, that's going to cost you. And other than that, yeah, I mean, Kyrie's had a really good season. Al Horford, you know, was a little banged up at the start of the season. He's been just incredible the last like 2 months. So, you know, the rest of the team is still kind of in place. It's just like three of the absolute most important pieces have all kind of had a tough time this year.
What's been the Gordon Hayward story this year?
Started the season real slow, and then he kind of gradually picked it up through the year, and kind of you could tell that things were starting to work for him because he started when he would hit his first three for a long time, you knew he was going to have a good game, and so you could kind of tell that he was healthy. He was just trying to like get himself back into a rhythm. That was kind of that first marker. And then recently, you know, over the last like 2 months, he's actually started to be a productive player, even when his three-pointer isn't falling. And, you know, his three-pointer still comes and goes. He's actually been really streaky, even over these last couple of months. But now he's back to, you know, I don't know what percentage of, you know, Utah Gordon Hayward he is at this point, but, you know, he's one of the team's most reliable ball handlers, one of the team's most reliable passers. He's been defending really, really well. I mean, he's had some really good games defensively. So he's on his way back. I think that next year he's going to be really, really good. It might go under the radar just because everybody's sort of, you know, written the narrative around him kind of is, oh, well, he's never going to get back to what he was. And, you know, that might be true, but I think he's going to be a lot closer next year than he is this year. But, I mean, that has been one of the biggest problems for the Celtics this season is not having the Gordon Hayward, the $30 million Gordon Hayward that they expected to have.
Yeah, I think a lot about how much seems to have changed for that group just since opening in Cleveland. Obviously, a lot's changed for the Cavs, but like that game really set them off on the path they're on now. Just because without Hayward, like it offered the opportunity for Tatum and all these guys, so it's really step up. So it's funny like how that was so pivotal, and it obviously makes sense it is. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back to get into what we're expecting out of Tuesday night's Cavs-Celtics game from Wicklands Arena. So stay tuned for more of this episode. And we are back. Okay, Tom, so Tuesday night, no Kyrie. He's sort of for me, the bummer of that isn't just like seeing how the Cleveland crowd would react to him considering everything, but also I would just like to see Colin Sexton play against him. That being said, what are you looking for? Like, is there anything from that you would like to see the Celtics try and do, or that they maybe should be working on as they get closer to the playoffs that people should expect to maybe get a good look at on Tuesday night?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's one big thing in particular. The Celtics have been experimenting whenever they can with a two big lineup with Al Horford and Aaron Baines. You know, Horford and another big. Like, sometimes that's when Baines has been hurt, which has been a lot this year, they've thrown Robert Williams out there. You know, basically just Horford and then another big man. Those lineups have just been devastating defensively. You know, last year, Baines and Horford lineups were really, really good, and the Celtics used them a lot, and they had a defensive rating of like 95. This year, in like much more limited minutes, the defensive rating with Baines and Horford has been 81, which is unsustainably incredible. But Horford is questionable still for tomorrow. I'm not sure if they'll play him or not. If they don't play him, he gets an extra like 3 days off before the Celtics play again on Friday. And that would, and total, because he's been dealing with a knee issue, he would have like 9 days off, which, you know, that's a pretty good stretch before the start of the playoffs. So I wouldn't be surprised if they sat him again tomorrow. But if he does play, I think that Baines and Horford would definitely be on the table. And, you know, Baines and Horford, too, Baines has really struggled to stay on the floor. Like, he's had sprained ankles, he's had all this kind of stuff, but those two work pretty well defensively as well. So that would be interesting. And then also, the Celtics have been trying to experiment with, or they haven't been experimenting with a starting lineup change, but they probably should. Their starting lineup has just been abysmal over the last, I think it's over the last month or so, and basically since the All-Star break. So I would say that those are the two big things to watch. Like, if the Celtics sort of mix stuff up at all, if they sort of try new things out that might work in the playoffs, and, you know, they're, like I said, they're gearing up for Indiana. So I think as much experimentation as they can do, you know, for lineups that would work against Indiana, that's kind of what I would expect to see.
I'm very curious to just see, from a Cavs perspective, number one, how Sexton will do against Rozier and Marcus Smart. I don't know how exactly Boston will line up, but Smart defended Sexton a decent amount the last time these two played when I was flipping through my notes, and Sexton's been on this offensive streak lately where he's putting up good numbers, but it's almost like D'Angelo Russell-esque where he's making really difficult shots, and I just don't know how sustainable it is. And against a guy like Marcus Smart, I wonder if that like is just something that doesn't work, if Marcus Smart does take on that assignment for a big chunk of the game. He also has this little floater that if someone like Baines, and I believe, tell me if I'm wrong, but Baines will drop back a lot on pick and roll coverage or when he's defending the lane. Sexton goes for this floater where he like tries to throw it over a big, and Baines seems like one of those guys that might be able to kind of disrupt that. So I want to see how that might play out. How do you think Boston would treat Kevin Love in this game? Like, how do you think they would approach what Kevin Love is at this point?
I mean, you know, Horford is probably the most natural answer to that, just because he is, especially at this point in the season. I mean, he's been so mobile. You know, he can get out. But obviously, the way that Love can space the floor, I mean, that's kind of a real problem for them. You know, I actually don't remember from the Cavs, who do they sort of have? What do they do as far as their big rotation right now?
So it's the Bucks game, if people watch that, threw it a little bit off. So lately the starting five has been Colin Sexton, Brandon Knight, Jetty Osmond at the three, Love, and then Ante Zizic, the two obviously came from Boston in the Kyrie
trade. Right.
But they also have Larry Nance Jr. and Tristan Thompson. Now, what happened in the Bucks game, partially because I think they just found it untenable, Zizic didn't play and Nance started. We don't know what they're going to do against Boston. But I would say it's very possible that they could go most of the game where it's two big lineups, and then you maybe see David Nwaba slide in at the four, and you'll see Marquese Chriss playing some four as well, weirdly enough.
Yeah, so I would say that the Celtics might not start with the two big lineups, so then they would throw Horford at Zizic and Marcus Morris at Kevin Love. And Morris is big enough that he can, you know, that he can, he's not going to get just bullied by Love or anything like that, certainly. And, you know, he's mobile enough that he can stick with him as needed. You know, the Celtics defensively, you know, you're right on with Baines in terms of dropping back. Obviously that costs you in other areas, but yeah, I would say just in terms of like the man coverages, you know, you'll definitely be looking at Morris. You'll definitely be looking at some Horford. And Love is going to present both of those guys different challenges in different ways. But, I think that'll be one of the more interesting chess matches of the night for sure.
We'll wrap it up on this. So is with this game for the rest of the season for the Celtics, do they seem to be prioritizing rest or prioritizing good results and good and just putting together good games? Because they are on this 4-game losing streak where they've really struggled.
Yeah.
So like, is it something where like they need to just like get a good win against a bad team, or are they just saying let's just get to the playoffs, be healthy, and we'll go from there?
Yeah, I mean, I think they would love to be prioritizing rest right now. I think that in like an ideal world, they would be trying to do that. Obviously they're sort of trying to do that anyway with having Kyrie sit, and having Horford out for, a while here with basically just knee soreness. They need to start winning. It's still not completely out of the question. It's unlikely, but it's still not completely out of the question that they fall to the sixth. They need to lock some things up. They can still get to the four seed. They need a couple of wins over Indiana. They've got two more games against Indiana. So I think at this point, it'll be sort of a mix. They really need a win. Like, they really can't afford to keep dropping games like this, even if it's not for playoff seeding, just in terms of, like, they need to sort of have some semblance of a rhythm going into the postseason. So I would say it's a bit of a mix, but, the 4-game losing streak has definitely complicated things, and I don't know that Brad Stevens would ever admit that. He's a very process-over-results type of guy, but, everybody needs to win, especially going into the postseason, and this team needs a couple of them.
Has there been one part of the losing streak that has been most alarming to you when you've watched them?
It's not really, just because it's been the same type of thing all season. They've had these stretches where they look really good and then they look really bad, and and they've blown big leads before, like even the Charlotte game, that's not even close to the biggest second half lead that they've blown. They blew a 28-point second half lead to the Clippers earlier this year. So, I think it's basically just kind of looked like, I guess that might be it. The fact that it still looks like business as usual and they are 73, 74 games into the season, that's not great. That they have, Marcus Smart came out the other night and was talking about how they've had all this progress, and from an outsider's perspective, I haven't really seen it. So I think that it's nothing new, and that itself is probably the most concerning thing, just that they're still who they have been all year, and then the playoffs are really looming.
You can find Tom on Twitter at Tom_NBA. Again, you can find his writing at Mass Live, where he covers the Celtics, in the show notes. You can find a great feature he wrote about how some Celtics, including Jason Tatum and Marcus Morris, are balancing fatherhood. I actually did not know that Jason Tatum was a dad until I read Tom's story. It's really good, and it's a good human interest basketball story, which we need more of. But Tom, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, of course, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks again to Tom Westerholm for coming on today's show. Thanks to you, the listener, for listening. Again, if you have mailbag questions for a future episode of Locked on Cavaliers, submit those on r/ClevelandCavs. You can find the link to that in the show notes below. Submit them on Twitter to @LockedOnCavs. Submit them via email to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. And if you want to submit them via voicemail, perhaps hear your voice on this podcast when we do a mailbag coming up here in the next few days or so. You can send in a voicemail to 440-207-0924 as well. We'll be back tomorrow with a recap of tonight's Cavs-Celtics game from Quicken Loans Arena. That is a 7 p.m. tip-off. No Kyrie Irving, as Tom and I talked about, but it should still be an interesting game. But thanks again for listening, and have a great Tuesday. Talk to you tomorrow.